Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. How often have you been in a situation and said to yourself, well, there's no instruction manual for this? If there's one event where we could all use some help preparing ourselves and our loved ones, it's for our departure from life. Annie Presley has co-authored Read This When I'm Dead, a guide to getting your stuff together for your loved ones to help you do just that. Perhaps best known for her prowess as a fundraiser for both nonprofits as well as politicians, Presley has combined the practical with the personal to create a workbook that may well become a family heirloom. Annie Presley's day job is as owner of McKellar Consulting. She joins us in studio this morning. And Annie, welcome to Up to Date. So nice to have you here.
Thanks, Steve. Great to see you again.
Well, Annie, this is the second Read This book you've done with your co-author, Christy Howard. You both had very personal readings for writing this particular book. What was your story?
Well, we were working together, Christy and I, and she was called away to her mother's bedside to tell her goodbye. And she returned to work the next day with a notebook that was 4 inches thick with a big ribbon around it and said, my mom's alive, and I've got to update all the documents.
Huh.
And so her mom has a debilitating disease but has lived all these years. My story is exactly the opposite. My mom did die when I was a kid. And we have nothing. We have no pictures of ourselves with her. I'm talking about my siblings. We have very little in her handwriting. We don't have any of her recipes. We don't have any of her backstory. You know, we had to kind of try to fill it in with other family members. So I was quite envious of Christy's notebook that she and her mom had prepared.
And you thought, by George, other folks should have it too.
I sort of have always wanted to do this. And I knew that we wanted to have a very irreverent sort of book, because the ones already out there are so kind of boring and sad and a little bit just off-putting. And so we put this one together, coming from the opposite ends of our spectrums, to cover all the material in between and make sure that it was a meaningful progression through time.
You know, we should probably point out that the format for Read This When I'm Dead is that of a kind of a workbook. People are meant to write in this, so, you know, right away they're passing along something personal and even rarer in this day and age, which is their own handwriting.
Exactly. And I heard somebody just yesterday say all the meaningful information is still being handwritten. And that's how I feel about this book. It's really important for somebody just to take the time to tell about their lives, where their stuff is, where it came from, what the story behind this stuff is, and truly their funeral wishes. That's as important as any.
So this is not, just to be real clear, this is not all legal stuff. It's a lot of personal stuff, too. I want to talk about some of that right here, because you're asking people who buy this book to pass along a lot of their personal and family history. Chapter one is titled All About Me, and it really is. From all the names a person's had, to whether they were raised by birth parents or adopted, to their education, their marriage history, it's all pretty detailed. Besides painting a more complete picture of ourselves, what's the practical purpose here, Annie?
Well, I was just looking. The funeral industry in America is $20 billion a year. So let me tell a quick story. My dad, 16 years with cancer. Seven kids from the melded families, hospice. My stepmother says, could you help me plan his funeral? And I said, well, of course, thinking, you know, 16 years, they've got it pretty well figured out. So I get out the pad, the pencil, and she says he'd like to have taps played. And I said, oh, okay, great. Write down taps. That's it. It's all she got, 16 years. So I felt like if my dad would have had the book, the practicality of it, the anonymity of it, he could have filled it out himself. He could have told what he wanted, but he certainly could have said who his pallbearers and perhaps his scripture, and we would have known. And then maybe some family history, you know, his favorite recipe, that sort of thing, he could have jotted down too.
You also include a lot of statements to be completed. I'm thinking of ones like, my best friends in grade school were, or my first midlife crisis hit when I was fill-in-the-blank years old. Do people generally like to tell stories about themselves like that?
You know, a lot of people do, but they don't necessarily want to share it. And so the book, writing it down in the book, makes it deliverable at some point. And we encourage people to fill this out alone or together with a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't want to share it, then we suggest they simply hide it in their underwear drawer. And then they can tell everybody, it's in my underwear drawer. Mm-hmm. And you can be pretty confident nobody's going to go through your underwear drawer when you're alive.
Yeah.
But somebody will go fish it out when you're gone.
The page that stopped me had this at the top, what I never told you and why. I mean, that could lead to a whole lot of soul searching there, Annie. Why did you think it was important to include a section on that?
Well, because everybody has a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who are facing death are ready to share it, but not necessarily with someone else who's alive.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to just offer that option. And the great thing about this book is you can just flip around. If you find a page that you like, fill it out. If you don't have to go through it page by page in sequential order.
You know, it's not until the part two that you get to the business side of all this. And we should point out again that this book is not a legal document per se, but it does highlight important documents that deal with assets and with health. Like what? What are some of those documents?
Well, the newest, biggest document, of course, 55% of Americans don't have a will.
Yeah.
So if you just start there.
I've got to update mine.
Yeah. And it does need to be updated. So we consider this, if you reference this book in your will, it becomes an appendix essentially to the will, and everything in here is more or less binding.
Hmm.
Because then your wishes are known and they're in your writing. So that's one practical aspect of it. Then it talks a little bit about a trust. It talks about some healthcare directives, a living will. There's a new thing called a pulsed, how you help make decisions.
Called a what?
A pulsed.
What is it?
It's an end-of-life document.
Mm.
So the point is that we suggest that you look into all these more legal documents and use our workbook as a supplement to those.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not a will.
And your point is, but it'll still carry some weight, even though it's not an official legal document.
It absolutely will. And if you don't have any kind of legal direction, then, of course, your estate goes to the court. The court gets to decide how it's meted out. And if you just have this book, then the court would have this book and say, okay, I see all my toy collection goes to Steve, and all my Steinbach nutcrackers go to Annie. You know, it's in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the judge doesn't have to make those decisions.
Annie Presley is my guest. She's the co-author of a new book, Read This When I'm Dead, A Guide to Getting Your Stuff Together for Your Loved Ones. You also devote a good number of pages to recording all sources of income. And I'm wondering, how diverse can that be? Give me a range of things here, Annie.
Well, it could be just payroll, Social Security, insurance, annuity dividends, any kind of investment, where your money comes from. One of our biggest concerns here is that people have a lot of accounts online now.
Mm-hmm.
And you simply, if I get hit by a truck on the way home, you got to know where all my money is online. You got to know my passwords,
mm-hmm.
and you got to be able to access it. You got to convince the bankers that you're my loved one and that you need to have access to that income, that
mm-hmm.
money. So it's really good idea to have a list of where it comes from, and then we actually listed where it goes so that you can tell where everything is and what needs to be done with it.
Is it more complicated to die and then tidy things up afterwards for loved ones than it used to be?
Oh, yes. In fact, we hear stories constantly from people who say, you know, I've never spoken to my sister again. We couldn't decide. We had a big fight, and it can be over stuff. It can be over money, the house, the cars, the land, the nutcrackers, the toy collection, whatever it is. It needs to be written down. That's what we know.
In this book, I can write down which papers I do and don't have and even where they're located, right? I mean,
right.
That brings up a very useful point about this guide. It's a quick reference. How important is that?
Well, it's so important that we update the book regularly because the websites that we reference and the legal names of documents and different advantages to you, we update them regularly because they change so often. So one of the most recent changes was Facebook changed its policy on how you manage your page after you're gone.
Hmm.
So let's say next week's your birthday, you die this week, and then next week you get 100 people wishing you happy birthday because they don't know you're gone. And it can be really off-putting to the family. So Facebook now requires a trustee, and you have to go on the Facebook page, and go into the settings and change the name to your trustee.
I didn't know that.
So this stuff is all in here. So digital assets are a big deal right now. You're managing pets after you're gone, big deal right now. We have all kinds of different relationships now, not all traditional marriages.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is covered in here, and we're not the experts on it, but we are the experts on where you need to go to find more information.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Why don't more people have wills? What holds people back?
You know, I don't,
from all these different documents, what is it?
I'm not really sure what it is, other than the fact that our culture is just really bad about death and dying.
Mm-hmm.
We often say that we're not good at celebrating a life well lived. You know, we'll have a birthday party, a baby comes,
yeah,
a wedding, a shower. We had Memorial Day for our warriors. We have Cinco de Mayo. We have all these great parties. And yet we don't party when someone moves on to the next realm, whatever that is, whatever you believe it is. And we really want to change that conversation. And it's part of the reason why our book is so irreverent and it's fun. So in the workbook, you fill it out and you become the ultimate author. But in the book, we have little drawings of ourselves, avatars of our faces, and Christy and I talk to you throughout the book.
Huh.
And we say, oh, don't forget to tell where you hid the cash. Because oftentimes somebody goes, the family starts going through the house, like, I know there's $1,000 in an envelope. I just know it.
Mm-hmm. And they never find it, right?
Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Your questions for Annie Pressley about the whole business of dying and getting your stuff together before that happens, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You've mentioned all the stuff that people accumulate, the big and the little things that people, you know, pile up over a lifetime. One of your directives here is make sure your stuff can be found, right? People can locate it and figure out where it is.
Well, you don't necessarily have to have it all piled up in a single location as long as you reference it in the book. So my husband got a BB gun when he was 6 years old from his dad. His dad passed when he was in college, and so that BB gun is really special to him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know where it is, and we know who is going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really have to have everything in a pile. You just have to know, you know, how to get your hands on it.
And how important is to figure all that stuff out ahead of time? I mean, how much grief are you saving down the road if you sort that out now while you're still alive?
Well, it would be really great. The experience with my mom was our parents were divorced. People, her friends, people were coming to the house and they just started taking things. And so we don't have very many of her personal items as a result, just because there was nobody there to kind of manage it and have a document that said, you know, Annie gets the necklace and, you know, that sort of thing. So stuff just disappeared. Furniture that her dad, my granddad made,
mm-hmm,
stuff like that, just gone. We don't know where it went.
But if that stuff is worked out ahead of time, you save all kinds of arguments on the backside, right?
That's right. And it's really very helpful because then the brother and sister don't fight. And my brother and I did not fight, but we hear stories like this all the time.
Horrible stories, probably.
Oh.
Yeah. And then you mentioned already the need to have passwords to all these different accounts in this digital age that we live in. That's important, too.
You know, one of the things that I'm doing in my own book is I just simply have all my passwords on a sheet of paper, and I just print the sheet of paper as I update it and stick it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so hard to keep track of all that. It really, really is. But my experience with my mom is one day she's there and the next day she's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all need to get in that mind frame that we are going to die. Everybody's mm-hmm. going to die, really.
A lot of people don't want to face it, though.
And you're right. They don't. My dad was a perfect example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that he left such a mess behind. It took him over a year to go through his estate. Nobody got what they thought they were supposed to get. You know, it's just a mess.
Yeah.
Not necessary.
And you don't want to leave that to anybody.
Why would you?
Yeah.
Why? We plan everything else.
816-235-2888 is our phone number. Annie Pressley is my guest. Susan from Independence, you're on Up to Date. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
I just recommend so highly the thoughtfulness that this brings. Any kind of conversation with family members is always really good and healthy. And I was given a book because we are actually downsizing and moving. And the book really helps in that process. Is don't toss my memories in the trash.
Good one.
And it, it's just a little one, and it just gives thoughts and helping people think through some of that stuff. It's by Vicki Dellaquila, D-E-L-L-A-Q-U-I-L-A. Don't toss my memories in the trash.
Well,
I just wanted to recommend it because it helps people think about things in a different way.
Right. Annie?
Well, I'm sure it's wonderful, but probably not as cool as ours. And certainly not as comprehensive. But I'm glad you're finding it helpful, and you're one of the people who are changing the conversation, and that's what's really, really important.
Let's go to Steve from Liberty. Steve, you're on UpToDate. Annie Presley is the guest. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm an attorney. I just wanted to point out that there is a provision in Missouri law, if you have a valid will, for what's called a tangible personal property list, which is kind of what she's talking about. I was just concerned with the comment that said if you write out a list of things, the judge will have to follow it. I don't believe that's really the law in Missouri. So have a proper will, do a tangible personal property list attached to it, then you're sure it will be valid.
Correct. I misspoke. You are absolutely right.
What is a tangible personal property list, Steve?
You specifically list items, the person that's to receive it, you date it and sign it and put it with your will. And the will itself will have a provision in there providing for that list. So it saves people from having to divide up a lot of that, quote, stuff later on, like she said, and it eliminates a lot of disputes. My wife's grandmother had pictures that everybody wanted. She had 4 and 5 names written on the back of that. Well, that just caused chaos and heart failing.
You know what we did?
Thanks, Grandma. Yeah.
In our book, Steve, what we did, and this was at a lawyer's recommendation, is actually put a checklist at the top of several pages, and you can just check coins, collectibles, china, crystal, family treasures, furniture, guns, jewelry, sporting, silver, anything else. And then you describe the item, you tell the brand when it was acquired, you tell the story, where it's currently located, if it's been appraised, what its value is, to whom it should go. Every single page, we've got like 30 pages in the book, just where you can just check what you have, describe it, and then use it as an addendum.
Very helpful, because, yeah.
To the will.
When you try to administer an estate for people, it's a disaster sometimes when they don't do those things. So that part is extremely helpful. I appreciate your comment.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it. Did I read correctly? There's a site, we're talking about social media stuff, Annie. There's a site where you can arrange to create messages to be posted after you die?
Yes, there is. And I can't tell you right off the top of my head, and I could flip through and find it.
It's in there somewhere.
It is, and it's in the funeral planning. Because when you go through the funeral planning, like my dad could have said, you know, who he wanted for pallbearers, what scripture, what music, you know, that sort of thing. You can choose. I personally want to be cremated and turned into fireworks and shot off at my party.
Really?
But you can be turned into a diamond. You can be turned into a reef that you can throw out into the ocean or the lake.
Because you want it to be, you want your funeral to be fun, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have jazz and barbecue at my party.
Well, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the thing is that there are all these different resources in this book. And one of them is you can actually have a cake baked and sent to somebody on their birthday after you're gone. Huh. You can make all those provisions before you go.
You know, the last part of this book, speaking of funerals, is devoted to my final wishes, including my fabulous funeral, which are two words I don't normally associate with one another. What are some of the more important wishes we should make people aware of?
Well, I guess that one of the things that most families need closure. Some kind of closure, and somebody who says they loved you, you were important to them, you changed their life in this way, you know, that sort of thing. And there are lots of families who are not good at having those conversations. So this is a great place to just say, I really appreciated you for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And that, so closure, I think, is the number one. But the number two is that when you are grieving, your loved one is gone, and you're trying to make business decisions about which casket, how much to spend, where are they going to go, all this stuff. You can't think clearly. You're not capable of it because you're grieving. And so it's a benefit to your family for you to have thought it out, written it down. So they just kind of go through it and say, okay, this is clear. We know what he wants. We know.
People are calling us asking where they can buy the book. Is it available in most bookstores?
It is. It's at Rainy Day. It's at Prospero's in Westport. It's at Bruce Smith in Prairie Village.
All
it's
the
at
important
Unity
places.
And Independence, at UMKC Bookstore. And then, of course, in the trunk of my car, as John Grisham recommended.
And you can, did he?
He said that's how he started. Yeah. And so that's what we're doing. And then you can also buy it on our website, which is booksbyace.com.
If it worked for John Grisham, it can work for Annie Presley, right?
Yeah, he was pretty cool.
He's been here a couple of times. Just terrific guy. Gabby emailed us this. Oh, how I need about 4 copies of this book. My father-in-law just passed. He left no written will. My mom-in-law had to pull it all together and keep explaining. I would love to get her a copy and one for my wife and I. How much are they? He wants to know where they can get them.
Well, they're $29.95, mm-hmm. and then we collect Missouri tax, so it goes to $31.74 with tax. Okay. It's interesting, Steve. We've had a number of people buy multiple copies. I think our record right now is 13, but they're handing them out to friends and family.
Needs to get done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you tell some great sidebar stories to illustrate points in the book, and one fabulous funeral you write about was for the legendary and much-loved Buck O'Neill. What happened there?
Oh, this is going to make me cry. You know, he was a client of mine for about 10 years. And he was a Navy man who worked in the bottom of a ship.
Mm-hmm.
He had not gotten to go to public school in Sarasota, Florida. He'd worked in the celery fields.
Mm-hmm.
But he had these big, giant hands, and he was going to be a baseball player. So he served in the Navy, came back out, played ball, you know, was the first black manager in big league baseball. And when we were planning his funeral, I called the White House and said, we need a flyover. And they called me back and said, and these are my friends because I worked with them on the George W. Bush campaign. And they said, well, he wasn't an officer and he didn't win any medals, so we can't do a flyover. It's against the rules. And I said, excuse me? He's a hero.
Hmm.
Who cares? He was ironing white men's shirts in the bottom of a ship.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he served our country. That was his job. And I was fit to be tied. So then called my friend Matt Blunt, who was the governor of Missouri at that time, and he sent us a single helicopter that was so cool. And they choreographed it with a single bagpiper.
Mm.
And it was just amazing how well it worked out. But
a helicopter.
Yeah. And my husband's in the Kansas Air National Guard, and I called him, and I said, they gave us a helicopter. I mean, I was beside myself. And he said, it will be very cool.
Huh.
And the bagpipes.
And it was. Yeah.
It was. The bagpipes kind of slowed their music, and the chopper just went, toof, 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 toof.
Neat.
It was
that's
cool.
Neat. Well, let's talk politics for a minute because you spent so much of your career doing that. You raised record-shattering amounts of money for George W. Bush's first presidential campaign. Tell me about how he reached out to you to get that done.
Oh, this is a great story. So I've been in politics since high school. Springfield Mo, came up with Jack Danforth, Kit Bond, John Ashcroft, Roy Blunt, all those guys.
That whole generation, the modern Republican Party in Missouri.
It was just the mindful thinking crowd. So I was Kit's finance director, 91-92, his first reelect to the United States Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And we shattered fundraising records that year, raising over $5 million for the first time it had happened in either party. And we used a guy in Texas to do our direct mail named Carl Rove. And Carl was just a nice guy. His wife got cancer while we were in the middle of the campaign, and he just throttled through it and just was super cool and just very, very effective and successful for us. So then jump shift, John Ashcroft runs for the United States Senate in 94 as Danforth leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And we called Carl and said, hey, will you do this race too? Sure. You know, he was just very, very easy, fun, inexpensive, mm-hmm. and successful. And so we kind of had some interest in running John for president and didn't find a lot of encouragement. This is a technique called shopping, when you mm-hmm. take a candidate around the country and you see how well received he is.
Mm-hmm.
And John was, you know, a little bit more of a holy roller, the more conservative kind of politician. And there just wasn't enthusiasm for that at the time. And after we shopped John around, Carl called and said, I'm going to shop around George W. And I said, well, if you come to Kansas City, let me know. And I'd be happy to do your rent for you. And my buddy, who was with me on both those campaigns, was in St. Louis, and he agreed to do the St. Louis event. So here comes George W. with Carl to Kansas City. We had a big event, and none other than Buck O'Neill called me and said, I want to meet this guy.
Hmm.
And I said, Buck? He's a Republican, because Buck always had a crush on Hillary Clinton. And he goes, I know, but he's a baseball man. And I thought, oh, this is different.
He was a baseball man.
And so off we went to this event. And they had a love fest, of course. Couldn't stop talking baseball. But in the meanwhile, people were taking their babies and shoving them in George W.'s hands and getting their picture made with him. I had one guy with a Sharpie wanted him to sign his own arm. So George W. signed his arm. I mean, things we hadn't seen in a while. He just had an ability to connect with people just in immediacy.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked it. He was approachable. He was fun. He was modern. And
what did you take away from that experience?
Well, I got to tell you, working on a presidential campaign is by far the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole stinking life.
Because?
It's just nonstop, 24/7, grind, grind, grind. And it's populated by young people. And by the time I did it, I was a little bit older and I had a very senior position, which was great. But it's just super, super hard.
But you raised a lot of money.
Oh, yes, we did. But people were ready for him. They wanted it. They wanted a Republican. They wanted somebody thought that was a little bit more engaged. And he's just a very super neat guy, just a really available guy.
You once spent an hour sitting tight with Margaret Thatcher while a couple of armed protesters were hauled off to jail. What happened there?
We brought her in for Schwartz Parkway Health Center in 1995 and used the political model of fundraising for the first time in Kansas City in the nonprofit arena.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a principal, you have different levels of giving, and that provides different levels of access to that principal. So we brought her in, and there were protesters. She had Scotland Yard with her, which is the equivalent of Secret Service. And Ambassador Price, of course, lived here, and he and his wife and Donna Del Hall were the co-chairs of the event. And so it was guaranteed to be a great event just because.
Mm-hmm.
But the Scotland Yard guys had a little bit of a heartache, and the protesters in front of the Hyatt at that time, they had seen somebody with a gun, a small handgun, and they were trying to track him down. We were supposed to bring her to the front. The limo was to come to the front, and they called at the last minute and said, "We're going to use Plan B. We're going in the kitchen." And I remember hosing down the kitchen because there's an interest there for food trucks to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
So she could actually step out without slipping on lettuce and tomatoes
that
had fallen from the truck. So we knew we were having a problem. We went to the patrons party where she met, you know, some of the people and got pictures with a lot of people. And then we went to a brief hold, which is not uncommon, so people can move, get in their places, and then bring her on stage. And during that brief hold, which was probably going to be 10 minutes— hour, and they were looking and looking and looking for this Nimrod who brought a gun.
Huh.
Did find him, took him to jail, and we went on with the show. But it was an interesting conversation. There were probably 10 or 12 of us in the room.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice company.
Amazing.
You also were in a near plane crash with John Ashcroft, who was then governor, and Senator Kit Bond.
Yeah, it was actually John's race, I think, for 94, but truthfully, I can't remember. And in Missouri, you do fundraisers, breakfast, lunch, cocktails, dinner, if you can get them booked. And that was my job. And so you get them, you know, a day or two a week, and that's all you do is you run around and go to these fundraisers. So we were working pretty hard and had been at it a big day. And the campaign rents a very small plane. So you can get around all these places because you might be in Rolla and then go to Springfield and then go to Cape,
mm-hmm.
and then end up in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So you just can't drive it. It's impossible to drive it. And then there are people there to pick you up and get you around when you go. There was a horrible electrical storm one night, and it just so happened we were on a little plane. And the pilots were getting very nervous, and we were very nervous, and it was cracking all around us.
Mm.
So, you know, just think about that nighttime. And then the crack of the lightning, and then you can hear the thunder, and it was just
ouch.
A little overwhelming. But we got down, and we did take an emergency landing in a different airport and got out of it.
Annie Pressley is a co-author of Read This When I'm Dead, A Guide to Getting Your Stuff Together for Your Loved Ones. She and her co-author, Christy Howard, will be in conversation this evening with former Ambassador Alan Katz at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. The event begins at 6:30. To reserve a seat or get more information, go to kclibrary.org. Annie, what a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be here.
You bet.